Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantide, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am solo dolo, but really kind of not, because there's more people here than there usually ever are. Jarrett Hill.
And I'm the special guest host today on Fantide. Actor, public speaker, podcast host, content creator. I could go on, but basically I'm your quintessential and proud multi-hyphenate. And I'm super honored to be here. I'm Ashley Blaine Featherston Jenkins, also known as ABFJ.
I think you actually beat us for the longest intro. We've been working on who can do it the longest, and you want us on this one. Our resident authoress is out developing their profesh, doing some cool retreat shit that I'm a little bit jealous about, and we can talk about when they get back. But first, Ashley, I want you to kind of tell us a little bit about your podcast, Trials to Triumph, before we get into the A segment.
Yeah, so I have a new podcast called Trials to Triumphs on OWN Podcasts, and I am exploring the Trials to Triumphs journey with amazing guests who I'm inspired by, who I know that most people are inspired by. And the goal is to dig into the journey, because for me, I found that my inspiration has often come from hearing about the trials in people's lives, not just celebrating the triumphs. The trials are where you learn, this is where you grow, this is where you become a better person. And in exploring them, I feel like we're all able to live our lives fuller, brighter, and more authentically in the pursuit of our own dreams.
Well, in the age of Brené Brown and mental health awareness and getting into all your fields, we're going to be talking about vulnerability throughout the show today. But first up, you wanted to talk a little bit with a special guest that we'll have joining us in just a moment. Her name is Dr. Nicole Liggins, and I'm excited to have her on the show because I've kind of known her for a little bit of time. We'll get into that in just a moment. But Ash, what did you want to talk about in our first segment today?
My husband and I have been on the pursuit, what I like to call the pursuit of parenthood, for almost a year. And timing is definitely everything when it comes to baby making, as I would say, but so is education. As a woman who personally has been through a lot, and as it pertains to my uterus. And so I just really want to get into it. You know, in the past 4 years, I've had a uterine fibroid removal. I've been placed on daily bromocriptine for a hyperprolactinoma. I've had I take multiple supplements. I've done AMH testing, genetic testing, HSG, all while I'm approaching 35 at the end of this year, which, as most of you know, they're calling a geriatric pregnancy. I think they think it sounds better when they say advanced maternal age.
Because geriatric is just rude.
Like, they're both rude. Like, the advanced maternal, like, I'm just like, okay, guys, why can't I just be 35 having a baby? I don't understand what the problem is. So, Dr. Nicole, I am excited to dig into it. And the prayer is that we all really leave here feeling like we have more education on family planning.
So, Dr. Liggins, welcome to Fantai.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here today.
So first things first, you've heard Ashley talk a little bit about what her journey has been like. What comes up for you as you're hearing that?
A lot of things. I think it's always entertaining to me to hear how patients assess the names that we, or the diagnoses that we give them. So when she's talking about the elderly or the advanced maternal age and those titles that we give patients, it's always interesting to see it from the other end. I myself would be considered such as well. Because I'm going to be 38 here very soon. So I get it. You know, it's a really cool opportunity. I'm happy to be here so I can share some knowledge, because I really do believe knowledge is power, as cliche as it may sound.
So Ash, I know that you had like some specific things where you're like, what am I supposed to be doing with this information? Or what am I supposed to do with, how am I supposed to have a conversation about this? What are some of the things that were on your mind?
The biggest thing for me is like, whether it was going to do the HSG test or AMH testing, I just feel like I wish I knew them before. I want to know what would be like the cheat code you would give to people that are trying to embark on their family planning journey, that they don't have to find these things out after a year of trying.
Fair. Very good question. So I would say there's this saying that I use with my patients a lot, and it's called making yourself fit for pregnancy, right? The fit category is a wide range. It's not an exact definition of it, but more what I'm trying to get them to understand is that, you know, pregnancy is a miraculous process, but there are a lot of things that have to go perfect in order for a pregnancy to come out as successful, right? And we deem successful as a live birth of a baby, hopefully that's going to go on to live you know, a nice, enjoyable life. And so I think part of, to answer your question, actually, part of the reason why you may hear a little bit of apprehension, or you may even sense a tone in some physicians' demeanor when they find out the age of a patient is over 35, I think it's because they want to start managing expectations early. Because unfortunately, as women do age, there are a lot more opportunities for things to not go as perfectly. And because of that, we have to be a lot more tight with things. So what I like to tell patients when it comes to being fit for pregnancy is, the first thing is you're the vessel, right? You are going to carry this miracle. Your body is going to form this miracle. And so you want to come into pregnancy as healthy as possible. And I deem that being mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical, all around. If you have chronic medical conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, asthma that's not being controlled, any of those things, if they're not under the care of a physician and being managed appropriately, that's one of the first things you want to make sure that you're doing, is getting those chronic medical conditions in check. In doing so, when you're talking to your primary care physician, make sure that you let them know you are aspiring to become pregnant, because there are some medications that can control those conditions, but they're not safe for pregnancy, and they can cause significantly bad outcomes for the fetus, right? And so it's that open communication, right? Getting yourself physically fit. They don't call it labor for no reason. It's hard work. Some patients push in 2, 3, 4 hours at a time to get these babies out. And so you want to have yourself be fit physically as well. And so I start with the fit for pregnancy. I think those are the biggest things. Timing your menstrual cycle, you know, making sure that you know when your period's starting, when it's ending, so you can expect to know when your ovulation is going to be happening. And if that's not coming regularly, your OBGYN is going to need that information to try to figure out what part of your cycle may have a defect, which will then help us to know which hormones you may need, or which ovulation induction agents, or other things like that. So that's what I like to start with.
Can I ask the I have no experience in this space question?
Absolutely.
So Ash, you were throwing out a few different like names of tests and stuff like that, and like giving us some acronyms. Can you tell us what those things were, and then Nicole explain what they are?
Yeah, Nicole, could you please explain AMH testing?
So AMH stands for anti-Müllerian hormone. Basically, what it is a marker that gives us a generic idea of the reserve of eggs left in a woman's ovaries, which entails will tell us the likelihood that they may conceive spontaneously. And so as we get older, that number decreases.
My OBGYN ordered an HSG test, which was the most painful thing I have ever done.
What is that?
An HSG stands for hysterosalpingogram, which in medical terms means like it's an X-ray, or specialized live X-ray, of the uterus and the fallopian tubes. And the reason that we perform that test is because we are trying to ensure or check for the patency or openness of the fallopian tubes. So a patient goes into an X-ray suite, they have a catheter placed inside their cervix that then injects dye into their uterus and then through their tubes. And the radiology technician is taking live X-rays of that fluid that is radioactive, that will show where it's spilling. The idea is we want to see the fluid going through both of the fallopian tubes, because that means they're open. But there are reasons that can cause that to not be the case. And so it's good to know that, because some of those reasons may mean we need to remove the tube, or a patient may need like a surgical assessment of their inner uterine lining or things like that. So that's what that test is.
Question, just curious, if a tube is removed, then what?
So if one tube is removed, you can still get pregnant from the other tube, as long as it's a normal functioning tube. Great question.
Gotcha. Okay. And is it just that the egg then just is like going in the direction and finding just whatever the open tube is, and then just go down that route?
Good question.
Okay.
So your fallopian tubes have a part to them, which is the very end. I liken it to like these little fingers. They're called fimbria. And basically when your ovary ovulates and shoots off the egg, the fimbria kind of bring the egg up into the tube. And so regardless of if you ovulate from the right side or the left side, the fimbria that you do have present is going to be able to attract that egg and bring it down into the uterus.
Wow.
Now I've been hearing a lot of different like acronyms that Ash has mentioned in our conversation preparing for this. And Nicole, you've talked about some with me as well. Talk to me about the difference between what is IUI and IVF, and how are those things different?
IUI stands for intrauterine insemination. So basically it's trying to mimic the I use the term natural, but for lack of better terms, but it's trying to mimic the natural conception process. So what that does is a medical provider, usually a physician, will take the sperm or semen and actually inject that through the cervix to introduce it directly into the uterus. So it can help alleviate any potential barriers that the sperm may be having to get to the egg and to help to have conception happen that way. So it's kind of like, you know, if a person with a penis and a person with a uterus had intercourse and the semen was ejaculated and went into the cervix, except for we're bypassing all of the vaginal parts and putting it directly where it needs to be. So
directly into the uterus.
Into the uterus, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
IVF stands for in vitro fertilization. And basically what that means is we take the sperm and we take the egg and we join them in a dish in a lab, very highly regulated lab, and we form the embryo there. And then that live embryo is then implanted into the uterus to grow into a fetus. So it's kind of the conception, instead of it happening in the uterus, it happens in a lab.
Yeah, I have another question about IUI, because I've gone down a million rabbit holes on TikTok and Instagram. I know that some women do, or some people do, medicated, I want to say it's called IUI, and non-medicated IUI. What is the difference? And is it a personal choice? Is it just explain the medication part of IUI.
Absolutely. So it depends on the reason the patient is getting the IUI, right? So if, say, for instance, you're a same-sex couple and you're trying to conceive, and one of the two persons in the couple wants to be the carrier, right? So what would happen is, you don't need medications. If that person is having a normal menstrual cycle every month, you can predict when they're ovulating, you know their fertility window, you can plan to just implant the sperm at the time of likely ovulation, right? So that's non-medicated. Medicated is reserved for some patients who either are advanced age and the time is of an essence, right? So we don't want to go through many failed non-medicated rounds of IUI, or it can be that maybe they have a defect in the amount of progesterone that their body makes. So their uterine lining may not get thick enough and nice and plush to hold that that egg once it starts to bury. So they may need some progesterone. Or it may be that they don't ovulate regularly, right? So they may need medications to help them ovulate so that we can then time the IUI. So it kind of just depends on the reasoning behind getting the IUI done in the first place.
One of the things that's also been interesting is, I know that we've had a lot of conversation on this show about Roe v. Wade and how, you know, the fall of Roe v. Wade really tends to complicate a lot of conversations around pregnancy and fertility and the ways that you know, folks can experience their pregnancy. When we're thinking about this fertility element of like people that have a challenge or that are using some kind of assistance, how does Roe interact with that or complicate that in certain places?
Well, you know, one of the biggest things that comes to mind for me is that, so for instance, if you're doing an in vitro fertilization process, right? A lot of patients, when they're doing that, it could be because either they have some genetic issues they need to overcome between either themselves or their partner, or, you know, maybe they're advanced maternal age. And we know that because of that, unfortunately, there's an increased risk of like chromosome abnormalities like trisomy 21 or Down syndrome and other related syndromes, right? And so what we usually offer patients in those cases is something called pre-implantation genetic testing, or PGD, which means we check the embryo to see if there are any abnormalities in the chromosomes before we implant it into the uterus, so that we can basically not put the body through a pregnancy if it's not going to be a desired or a desired outcome for that embryo, for that fetus, right? So there's a little bit of some fear and apprehension now, because it's like, well, what can we do if we find out that's the case, right? If this embryo now can't be aborted, or it can't be discarded, or it can't be, you know, given to science or whatnot, like what can we do, right? And so that's one of the fears there. The other side of the coin is, if it's not IVF and it's IUI instead, we offer patients usually within weeks 10 up to 20, a test that they can get done called non-invasive prenatal testing. And that's where we check the genetics as well, but that's through the mom's bloodstream. And so what if, you know, one of those same patients comes and finds out that, you know, at 14 weeks or so, this fetus has a lethal anomaly, or it has a lethal genetic condition. It's not going to be able to survive outside the uterus. Well, now does the mom, who may have complications already in her medical history, which led her to need fertility assistance in the first place, now does she have to carry this fetus and the risk associated with that for her body, just because she can't make a decision that she thinks is best for her and her family, and put herself at maybe increased risk for other things happening medically, right? Or, you know, or even the other side of the coin, what if she doesn't want to see this fetus suffer? What if she knows that at this point, it's not going to suffer in the way that it may if it's 32, 34, 38 weeks when it's born, right? So there's those kind of things that kind of come into play.
I feel like the way that the whole conversation around pregnancy and fertility and contraception, like just for the Black women that I know, has been so challenging, right? And like getting information and like figuring out who to talk to and who to trust and what to even ask. And then like the complication of Roe makes it even more, you know, distinctly challenging. So Nicole, we appreciate you being here and being a part of this conversation. Tell people where they can find out more about what you're doing and how they can find you on the social medias.
Well, I'm on Instagram at Doc McCutie. That's DocMcCutie. I'm there. You can check me out. I like to share a lot of wisdom and some knowledge as well sometimes. And that's how you can keep best in touch with me.
It just occurred to me, is Doc McCutie, is this have anything to do with Doc McStuffins?
Kind of.
Is that a reference?
So it's a nickname that my aunt gave. What? My aunt gave it to me and I kept it because it's super cute. So yeah, that's how it happened.
It is.
Like
thank
Dr.
you so
McSteen.
Much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We will make sure to bring you back. I appreciate your lens. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into vulnerability and having a conversation about the fan and the anti of giving away how we feel, what we experience, what we're talking about. That's up next. What's your summer fantasy? A whirlwind romance in Italy? Getting wet, dancing in a warm rainstorm, or maybe an unexpected summer fling? No matter how you want to get steamy this season, Dipsy has a sexy story for you to indulge in all your fantasies. I'm not even breathing anymore. How do I do that? Dipsy is an app of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. Dipsy also has sleep stories, wellness sessions, and now they also offer written stories. I'm going to tell you, as I've told you before, if you've ever explored any kind of erotica, the stuff for women by women is always a lot better. Let me tell you. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fantai. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/fantai. dipsystories.com/fantai. God knows I could go for a microdose gummy right now. If you are not familiar with microdosing, first of all, where you been at, sis? I don't know what's happening in your world or how you've not heard about this, but microdosing is something that you've got to check out. If you haven't heard of it, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel better, to perform better, and to feel healthier. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose gummies deliver the perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. I can tell you that this has been like a high stress week for me, and being able to just microdose a little bit to just kind of like take the edge off and also help me focus. As I've told y'all, marijuana helps me with my focus and creativity. It is invaluable. And I really think that if it's something that you've been thinking about, this is a great way for you to just give it a shot, give it a try. It's not too expensive, and we've got something for you. Microdosing is available nationwide. If you want to learn more about microdosing THC, you can go to microdose.com and use our promo code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com, code FANTI. You're going to love it. Welcome back to Fantai with my special guest co-host this week, actor and host of the brand new podcast, Trials to Triumph, over on OWN, Ashley Blaine Featherston Jenkins. Hey, girl.
Hi, Jarrett.
All right, so this week we're talking about vulnerability, and you were recently at my house for lunch, and we were kind of reconnecting after really years of not having seen each other. And we got to a point in conversation where you were talking about your podcast and what it's been like to do a show like Trials to Triumph every week. And so before we really dig too much into everything about like what it feels like to be vulnerable, we've already kind of talked about what the podcast is. But can you talk to me about what about podcasting specifically has felt so vulnerable for you in a new way?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm an actor, but I would say podcasting is the most vulnerable thing I've ever done. And it's because, you know, the way I always describe it is it's just me. There's no character. There's no mask. There's no filter. It's just me. And it's my thoughts and opinions and ideas, putting it out into the world in a way that can leave you feeling very vulnerable. It's wild. And although it's probably the most vulnerable thing I've ever done, the most freeing thing I've ever done, it's also the most rewarding thing I would say I've done to date in my career.
You are a person who like shares a lot about yourself on social media. I've been telling you that I think your Bachelorette weekend is like something that I just want to watch. Like, it sounds like so much fun from the friends that I know that were there. Mm-hmm. What is different about the vulnerability of doing a podcast as opposed to the way that you share on social media or the things that you tell about yourself when you're in interviews and stuff like that? What about it feels different?
The culture of social media is filters and edits and adding music and adding that. Like, it's just the culture of social media. It's not even that we're doing it intentionally. It's just what it is. We had beautiful pictures from my bachelorette, but a lot of them were taken by a professional photographer. So they look great.
Yeah.
Obviously, duh. And like, I get it, right? It's the occasion, right? Like, you're not about to catch me in these streets not being beat down, you know, for my wedding festivities, of course. But it's not the same as me coming here and doing this with you. It's just different by design.
Yeah.
I am just on a personal journey, particularly as it pertains to social media, to bring more of myself, less filters, less editing to social media, but just more in like a more macro sense, just the spaces that I'm in where I know that I'm of influence. Mm. Because if I'm of influence, I always want to make sure that people get the Ashley that's from the heart, like the digging deep, the excavation that you get when you really go into who I am. Because to me, that's how you really are able to touch people, you know?
I think that's one of the interesting things about like having platforms like these is that there is a level of expectation that we will share about ourselves, right? Last week, we talked about what it costs to be resisting all the time, right? To be a part of the resistance, be a part of the movement, to be standing up for communities, to be speaking out about XYZ things.
Yeah.
And how challenging that can be and how what is expected of you, right? And so I kind of want to get into like some of our fan and anti here, because we've got a lot of different ways to kind of look at this as far as like what it feels like to be vulnerable out in the world. And I can tell you like some of the things that I enjoy from the fan perspective about like being able to be vulnerable in the way that I am here and in the different places that I share is that the number one thing has always been the way that there's always someone that can relate. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be someone who will reach out, or, you know, oftentimes there'll be someone who will reach out and say like, one, I've had that experience, or B, I'm going through that experience, or C, like, I know someone that is going through that experience and I sent this to them, or I listened to it multiple times, or something like that. It always makes it feel like the sharing had value and that it was something that didn't just happen for the sake of it being cute or fun or to get a check or to be a part of the show or whatever. And that has been really, really rewarding for me as a podcaster, as a writer, as a leader, as a teacher, right? Even in class, I find like being vulnerable has been really valuable for my students because I'm able to talk to them about what my experience was, right? And asking the people that come in to speak to our class to open up about what they experienced. That's one of the things that I feel like squarely falls into the fan section. What about you? What's something that you enjoy about it or that works for you or does something for you?
I love everything you just said, and I completely agree. I think something else for me that I'm a fan of as it pertains to vulnerability is that vulnerability is contagious. Hmm. So I love seeing how my vulnerability attracts someone else who needed to hear what I had to say. And that then empowers them to be vulnerable for somebody else who might need to hear what they have to say. And then it keeps going.
It's a ripple effect.
It's a ripple effect. There's nothing bad about being vulnerable. There can be things that are uncomfortable that come to you after being vulnerable. But to me, vulnerability is always beneficial because the truth, no matter what setting you're in, matters and is important. The truth always matters. And vulnerability really is just another word for your truth. That's it.
I know that one of the things for you is like, you said that like getting to explore yourself and your thoughts with listeners from around the world has been a really interesting thing for you, and like kind of hearing from folks. I know for us here at Fanti, like, we have a map in our analytics where we can kind of see where people are listening from. And it's amazing to kind of see like yellow dots all over the world, right? And like see folks listening in Africa and in New Zealand and in Alaska and, you know, like all over the place. To also know that like we have very different scenarios living in different countries or under different kinds of government or different kinds of, you know, social conditions or whatever. But like there are so many things that are universal or that at least connect with other folks. I know another thing that I really think that works for me about being visible and vulnerable is that it relieves a bit of like this pressure to feel like you have to be Instagram perfect, like you talked about, right? Like being able to share about, like, on this show, I've talked a lot about depression and anxiety. I've talked about work experience. I've talked about love, relationships, and all kinds of things here. I have found that the more I'm able to just be like straight up with people about who I am and what I want and what I think, I feel less of a pressure to be like trying to put on, right? Trying to like act like this is great or act like everything is fine. And like one of the ways that I've seen that shown up is like I keep a pretty clean house, but like, I mean, it'll be a little bit of a mess if the right day hits, right? And so I used to like be agonizing when I have people coming over, like, is every single thing perfect? Did I, you know, white glove the bathroom, that kind of thing. Mind you, without the white glove, because I'm not that anal about it. But but now I'm like, listen, there's a laundry basket in the office, you'll be fine. Right. Or, you know what I mean? Like there's such and such on the couch, or I have to do, and I've started finding like even that as like a little way of like letting people come over to my house and me not being stressed over like trying to present a certain thing. I'm like, just breathe a little bit. Yeah. Right. And I find that in various different places in life of just wanting to be a little bit more real.
Well, here's the thing. Real is relatable. Yeah. It's relatable. Perfection is not. The gag of life is that we're all seeking some sort of perfection when really the goal to me is just to be more real, to be more flawed, to walk confidently in the flaws, knowing that everybody else has flaws too. You know what I mean? Like, it's like your bathroom isn't white gloved. Mine probably isn't either. So what's up? We can relate on that.
I listened to an episode with you and Aisha Hines, who is, we actually met Aisha the same night.
Crazy.
At a party, which was the most amazing, like, like New Year's Eve party that I've ever been to. Cause like, it was so fun. And like, there were all kinds of different people there. And like, Aisha walked into the room and like, it was like, knowing someone immediately that I've never met or seen before and like having a conversation with them, right? And like cackling with her because she was so funny. And I know that that was the night that you met her and you all had a conversation about her experience on the show of being an actress. And I'm curious for you, like talking about being an actor is probably a challenging thing when you're thinking about having come off of a really big show and thinking about like, what do you want to do next? And how do you see yourself going forward? How do you think about that when you're talking about those kinds of things?
I'm so happy you brought that up because I think that's such a great example. It's me being, and I've done it not only with Aisha, but many guests. I've been called to talk about the reality of where I am in my life and in my career, knowing that it's not what people think. For example, I'm not currently today working on a show, like a TV show, but knowing that people expect me to be, they expect me to be on, I don't know, whatever it is, and having to be just really honest and transparent and not wearing the fake mask and being like, yeah, I feel successful. I feel fulfilled. I'm very grateful for where I am, but I'm also in a really transitional spot in my life and my career, which every artist goes through. And having to really say that publicly and literally hear people be like, really? I would have, like, that's a weird space to be in. It's very vulnerable.
One of the interesting things about that specifically is like there's this idea that visibility comes with a bunch of other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That you know every other person that's visible, especially if they're Black, that you have all kinds of money, that you are, you know, just super famous, like those kinds of different things that come with the visibility that I know that you have from being on a show. How have people like approached you and had expectations of you that you had to like correct or like kind of adjust in the moment?
Oh my gosh, all the time. And oh, so actually it's so funny you asked me that because that's okay. So people always have preconceived notions about me, my life, my career that like 9 times out of 10 just are not true.
Like what?
Like I said, they think that I'm somebody somewhere probably, and it's not to say one day this will happen, but someone probably is like, oh yeah, Ashley's not nominated for an Emmy. That's crazy. Like, it's like, yes, I want that to be a part of my life one day, but I'm not on an Emmy nominated show at this point in my career. No.
You recently had your husband on the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure having your husband on the show is a different bit of a muscle to work and like being the host and talent, mm-hmm. but also being the wife, mm-hmm. as opposed to having a guest on who's a friend or someone that you've just met. Mm-hmm. What was having your husband on the show like for you?
It was amazing. And it was easy. First of all, Daryl's a hoot. He's hilarious. So it was a whole lot of fun, but it was great. And it was also just a really cool full circle moment, you know, with just the person who knows the most about my life, my career, my journey, my trials to triumph moments is him. So to be in the midst of a triumph and celebrating it with him was really beautiful and really special and a moment that I'll always cherish. And the best part about it is that we both recognize it as such.
Well, I want to move to the anti and like the things that can be challenging about being vulnerable. So for me, part of what's challenging, like I'm dating someone now more regularly and like that's been an interesting thing, right? Like being vulnerable with another person that I'm like interested in, but also mm-hmm. feeling like you're definitely giving someone weapons to use against you when you open up about different things. That is true in dating. That is true in life. That is true at work. Mm-hmm. That is true in all kinds of different places. And it's like, okay, nigga, I'm a share this or I'm a say that or I went through this thing and like, sure, we can talk about it. I feel like it is a little bit nerve-wracking to think like what someone can do with that information, especially on a podcast or in a book or that kind of thing. That part has been scary because I do feel like there are things I've shared on the show that like someone could come up to me and be like, they have that information about me and can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah.
That's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
What are some of the antis for you of about being vulnerable?
The biggest anti for me is when you bump up against somebody that like doesn't bang with vulnerability.
Has that happened?
Yeah. The thing is, it's oftentimes not blatant. You realize that the more you become vulnerable in your life, the less a certain person's presence is felt in your life. It's like that. Sometimes it's like a sneak attack. It's like, oh, I feel like we used to connect mm-hmm. so much more. We used to whatever. And now that I'm growing and expanding and wanting to really live in my truth, it seems like we're not connecting as much. Like that's the hard part. Like to me, vulnerability, it's like an easy way to rule out what's real, what's fake, who's real, who's fake. And sometimes that purging process is not easy.
I've also shared things and then not been ready for how much feedback I got about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like when I first talked about depression and suicidal ideation, I was not prepared for how much incoming there would be of like, outreach of DMs and comments and tweets and calls and text messages. And like, it was a little bit overwhelming, to be quite honest with you.
Wait, Jared, so sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. Question. How much of it would you say was positive? How much of it would you say was negative?
Well, with suicidal ideation, it was a lot of like positive, like, you know, praying for you, lifting you up, mm-hmm. you deserve to be here and all of those kind of things, which are really, really helpful. But it also like, it's a lot to absorb, right? Yeah. And then also to feel like you have to respond to every person to say thank you and say it in a different way. And, oh, I appreciate that. Or that was so kind. Or, oh, thank you. Like, and so it's like, it's a balance of like wanting to be vulnerable and share, but also to like, nowadays, for instance, when I'm going to be sharing something that I know is going to get a lot of feedback, I will kind of strategically plan my evening or my day or whatever it is to like share the thing and then be off to something else where I'm not engaging the social media, or I have my phone in the next room. When I shared my HIV status, for instance, and telling people that I was positive, mm-hmm. I wrote the post, I got it ready, I hit the button, and then I went and put my phone in my office and went and watched TV for hours, right? Mm-hmm. And like for a while sat there like, oh my God, what did I just do? Should I have done that? Was that a good idea? Yeah. Was that a terrible idea? And then like kind of settled into what I was watching. And then a few hours later, I came back and my phone had 50 text messages on like hundreds of comments. It was like a lot. And I was like, I got to figure out what to do with that. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, even with coming out about being positive, I got people DMing me saying like, oh, I'm also positive and I've never talked about it. Right. Or, oh, I became positive recently. And like, I didn't know that you were as well. Or I also had someone that was really upset that I hadn't told them first. Mm. Right. That I hadn't like shared that with them on the show before. And it was like, it was difficult because it was the only negative piece of feedback that I got. And it was from someone that I really cared about. Yeah. But like, I told my parents that day, mm-hmm. right? I told my parents in the hours before I posted it. And so it was hard to get like, someone is feeling hurt about this, but also it was just a lot of incoming to consider in those moments.
Yeah. But I would venture to guess that the reason you did it, and even, you know, the reason you do this is because it's bigger than you. Like you, something inside of you felt like, I don't know who this is going to heal. I don't know who this is going to help. I don't know who this is going to lift up because I'm saying this, but let's find out. Let's see.
How have you connected with the feedback that you've gotten?
It is giving me the fuel to keep going. Mm. The way the content in an episode is sometimes digested is in a way that I could have never imagined it would be.
Like how?
Like, something I can think is very like normal or just like an everyday share is something that somebody can be like, I needed to hear this today because I was going to quit my job and completely change careers. But after listening to this, I realized that I hadn't done the work to really look at myself and my life trajectory and realize that I need, like, whatever. It's a whole thing that to me, it's like, I just said that I decided to go to my audition when I was kind of tired and didn't want to go. It keeps me being hopeful and having, like, you know, a little bit more juice to keep going because I know that any and everything I say can be interpreted, to your point, for good or for bad, but I have to put it out there because hopefully it does more good than bad, obviously. You know what I mean? Hoping, right? But Jared, that's the scary part. The scary part is like, you know this from like you blowing up on Twitter, right? It's like things can either be interpreted as like, oh, I didn't think that was gonna do that. Or it can be interpreted like, wait, that's not at all what I said. How do people take what? I said the sky was blue. Why do people think I'm saying the sky is red? I never said that. Like, it can be.
The interesting thing is, like, musicians always talk about not knowing what song is going to be a hit. Like, they can kind of think they know, but, like, you don't really know until you put it out. Absolutely there and people not respond to it. Ashley, in our earlier segment, we were talking about your own, like, fertility journey and what that has been like, trying to, you know, figure out what the right questions are and what the right answers are and tests and all that kind of stuff. That's a vulnerable situation to be in. How did it feel to do that?
You know, I think the biggest part for me was I didn't realize that I had to accept my reality. Like my fertility journey has not been necessarily going the way I thought it would, to be completely honest. And although there's a lot of questions that I'm getting answered now, I also was like the 25-year-old trying to think ahead about my fertility journey now. And I felt like I took care of a lot of things. I got my fibroids taken out, always do regular pap smears, and I have a great relationship with my OBGYN. And, you know, I, like I mentioned, got a medication for my prolactinoma, which makes me lactate, which then tricks my body into thinking that I'm not trying to get pregnant. So I've been on medication for a long time. So again, I say all this to say, I felt like I took all of the steps to really, at this point, when it came time to really try to set me up. But the truth is, like, expect the unexpected, because yet we're still here trying to figure out what to do. And I think that that's the thing, is that like Dr. Ligon said, it's a miracle. So as much as you do, as many steps as you take, you know, even with her giving us the advice of like how to really go into family planning, you still don't know what to expect. And yeah. I can definitely identify with that feeling.
Even as we're talking about like birth and pregnancy and all of those different things, like if I'm being completely vulnerable, like I'm in the beginning stages of considering being a dad, right? And mm-hmm. well, like I've been considering it for a while, and beginning on that process of like, okay, well, this is what that would require. And, you know, how are we going to approach that? And what are the questions that I need to be asking about my rights versus the couple that I'm considering doing this with? And all of those kinds of things are questions that kind of sit out. And then I think about, how do I want to share that on the podcast, right? Like, it's something that I haven't really talked about publicly, but mm-hmm. it's also something that I know people are going to have a lot of opinions about, right? And going to have a lot to yeah. say about. And the reason that I haven't really talked about it publicly is because I know that I'm going to get DMs from people like, you need to be thinking about this. You need to be asking that question. Who are these people? Like, and all of those kinds of things. And one of the things that I know is an anti for you is that sometimes you kind of talk about something and you aren't even really ready to deal with it. And it sounds like that was the case with your fertility journey, of like even just kind of embracing it. How did you go about embracing that?
Yeah, I didn't even realize that I was in the midst of like an interesting journey with it. I didn't even realize it. It wasn't until I started researching more, like I said, on TikTok and Instagram. And I started just seeing a lot of women that were dealing with a lot of the same things that I am and seeing their journeys and what they're going through and how it makes them feel. And me realizing that I could relate to these women, which then led me to be like, okay, I am one of these. I am dealing with the exact same thing. And
that's what you were talking about. The ripple effect. Right?
Yes, like, it's the ripple effect.
Those women were vulnerable and talked about what it was like to go through that. And then you were able to see yourself in it and be like, yes. Oh my God, that's me.
Yes. And ultimately it helped me know the right questions to ask my doctor. When I go back in for my next appointment, I'm coming in with, you know, my notes app on my phone, like, hold on, doctor. So I saw a lady on TikTok say, like, you know, and of course my doctor's like cracking up. But for example, that's what led me to an HSG test, was I kind of saw women talking about the HSG test on TikTok. And then I went to my gynecologist or my OBGYN for another appointment. We were just talking about how it's going and blah, 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 blah. And before I could even say it, she was like, you know what? I think I'm going to order an HSG. And I was like, you know what, doctor? That was on my to-do list, actually. So I'm so happy that you mentioned it before I did.
Even that is an interesting thing, though, because I know I'm positive. There's someone who heard you say, I started to do research on Instagram and TikTok, and they were like, what? But like, what's so interesting is like, we've had so many people reference this show being in their dissertation, or this show, like, you know, something that they saw on social media. And like, when we're researching the book, we've been able to like find certain things through Twitter, because like someone had posted a piece of a study, and like, you go to the study and you find the thing. It's just an interesting thing to kind of find a way to like to get information in the best way that you can, right? When you don't know what to do or what to even ask.
Yeah. And I'll give you a good example. Like, I have a friend of mine has been on her, like, she and her partner have been on their pursuit of parenthood for a couple of years. And because Daryl, my husband and I are kind of just in our pursuit within this year, I never really thought that I could relate to her necessarily, right? Mm. Like I was kind of like, they've been doing this thing for, I don't know, 3 years or something like that. We're in the early days of whatever we're trying to be in our pursuit for parenthood. And it wasn't until she, who isn't like typically a very vulnerable person, it wasn't until she chose to be vulnerable with me about something she was going through in her journey that not only did I realize, oh my gosh, we're going through the same thing, but we wouldn't have been able to talk about it unless she had shared that with me. Mm-hmm. It also, she's become such a resource in my life, and she's a friend. She's someone that's been in my world and my orbit for many, 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 many years. And she's probably the person now that can relate the most to what I'm going through. But we would have never known that if she didn't choose to be vulnerable with me.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because I've talked to her about suicidal ideation, but I haven't talked about like the day, right? And like, I remember the day, like I was coming out of a dentist appointment and I was just like completely over it, right? And like the doctor telling me that my teeth were in great shape didn't do anything for me, right? Like it didn't lift me up. It didn't do anything. And I remember I had been so depressed at that point, and like I started like making the plans in my head of like, well, I should probably clean up my house so that if anybody, whenever people come, and then like I started hearing myself making it practical, right? Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, what's happening? Right. Yeah. And that's when it was really jarring to me. But the thing that was so important about it was it scared me enough that I started talking to people about it, like friends. I ended up talking to 3 friends that day, right? And saying like, I'm a little bit scared because I had this thought and I was like starting to make plans. And I had each of the 3 friends that I talked to that day said, oh, I've been there. And like, oh, I've had that moment. And I had no idea, right? Mm-hmm. Not only that I had people in my community that I could share this thing with, but that had also experienced it and could say to me like, well, this is what it felt like for me. And this is how I experienced that. And this is how I, you know, came through it. So as we're even kind of talking about it more, I'm seeing the way that what you talked about, the vulnerability being contagious and it having a bit of a ripple effect, tends to really, really serve more purpose than you might think when you're in the midst of it. So
very much so.
Okay. We want to know what y'all are thinking about vulnerability. How much Brené Brown have you taken in over the course of the last couple of years? Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam, and we're on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. Coming up, we're getting into dishonorable mentions to see what has been happening this week that we need to call out or call in or whatever. That's up next.
Hi, I'm Biz, host of One Bad Mother. Whether you're a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I signed my stepson up for a camp that is actually in another state. I feel really stupid, and I don't think we're going to get the money back.
And then he found out that the car manual is a book about cars, so now he's reading our car manual.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job. Download One Bad Mother on MaximumFun.org, and yes, there will be swears.
Hi, I'm Janet Varney, and just like you, I survived high school. And we're not alone. On my podcast, The JV Club, I invite some of my friends to share the highs and lows of their teen years, like moments with Aisha Tyler.
But when you're a kid, the stakes are just pretty low. Go to school, try not to get in trouble, get laid.
Jamila Jamil.
I watched television probably every waking hour during that time, and I was shit-faced on medicine.
And Dave Holmes.
We talked and talked, and then everybody left. It was just us two, and I was like, I love you.
Learn how you too can be a functioning adult after the drama and heartbreak of high school. Every week on the JV Club with Janet Varney. Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. This is a judgment-free show.
All right, now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve either a call out for their stupid or for their great or for their historic, whatever it is. Ash, what you got?
So I have a very exciting honorable mention. One of my very best friends, actress Christina Elmore, you know, she's my acting journey right-hand sister and all of the things. She booked a really big, wonderful gig, and she's so deserving of it. So I'm very, very proud of her.
We should say that Christina Elmore, who y'all might know from a little show,
Insecure.
You might know her from Insecure as
Condola. Don't call her condolences. That's my bestie.
I never do, but I know like everybody loves to call her every other kind of name. Christina plays Condola over on Insecure, and she has now been cast on The Girls on the Bus.
Yes, on HBO Max.
Very excited to check that out. Yeah. All right, what else you got, Ash?
Jill Biden.
What did I miss?
You didn't miss this, Jared. That's a really good act that you just put on. There's no way you could have missed this.
I don't know that I saw this. You know, I've been writing the book. What, I haven't been watching the news.
Oh my gosh. So Joe Biden was addressing the annual UNIDOS U.S. conference in Texas, and while praising the diversity of the community, she says that it was as distinct as the bodegas, which she meant bodegas of the Bronx, as beautiful as the blossoms of Miami, which everyone was like, I'm sure everyone was like, what are the blossoms of Miami? But okay. And as unique as the breakfast tacos here in San Antonio.
Oh, no.
And everybody was like, girl, what?
Oof. Huh? Girl, let that go.
You're talking about diversity and mispronounced bodegas. Talk about some blossoms of Miami that nobody knows what you're talking about. And like San Antonio to breakfast tacos. It was rough.
I should say, I mean, as a serious fan of the breakfast taco, I feel like I should be offended, but I don't even know if that's right. So, like, I don't know what Jill Biden was giving. Usually, I like Joe Biden. Dr. Biden.
I live for Dr. Biden. She is good vibes. I'm not going to lie. Now, you know, of course, people are saying some scriptwriter needs to be fired. I'm sorry, not script. I'm an actor. I apologize. Speechwriter needs to be fired. But there's also, like, you didn't read it before. You didn't have no edits.
Yeah, ooh, that's tough. Okay, shout out to Dr. Biden, but you got a dishonorable mention this week.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I want to give an honorable mention to this Alphabet bop. I got to tell you, I have a 3.5-year-old nephew, and so, like, kids' music is something that I'm seeing more of. And, like, I know what Paw Patrol is now, and I feel like I don't know what to do with that. But I wanted y'all to check out this amazing little song for your kids to learn. Check out.
Who's afraid of the cat wolf? Not me.
What's poppin'? What's shaking? Man, I'm in a mood for bacon.
Everyone on for cover.
Don't make me break in. Don't be scared. You don't have to hide. You don't have to fight. The more you run, the bigger you make my appetite.
So this little bop is from Jules TV. Jules is J-O-O-L-S TV, who apparently does like this type of shit. And it is so dope. It is a nursery rhyme and it is animated. I'm going to put the link into our episode description. But I was like, oh, this would have definitely been the version that I wanted to show my kids. Like, because it's amazing. I also want to give out a shout out to some of the Atlanta girls who I know listen to the show that are friends from back in the day. I want to give a shout out to the new appointee to Atlanta's mayor's LGBTQ advisory board. His name is Charles Stevens, and he's been doing a lot of really fantastic work in the Atlanta area around LGBTQ folks, Black ones specifically. I also want to give a shout out to a longtime friend I haven't talked to in years. His name is Darian Aaron. He received an award from NLGJA, the Association of LGBTQ Journalists, celebrating the work that he's been doing over the years. And I'm just really, really excited for Darian, because Darian, if you've been following Darian Aaron for any number of years, he used to do a blog called LOL Living Out Loud and has been covering our community for a really long time. So shout out to both Darian and Charles as well. It is now time for
Black History is happening every day.
That's right. Looking at Black history happening every day, both Ashley and I came in with very similar things to talk about this one specific moment. So before we tell you what it is, I just want you to take a listen to how it sounded on Twitter.
God.
What?
No, we need
to. No. Oh, my God.
You got nominated?
Oh, my God.
You nominated?
Yes.
Love yeah. Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
Yes.
I don't.
You're listening to the sounds of Cheryl Lee Ralph and her son, Etienne, learning that Cheryl has been nominated for her first Emmy for her work over on Abbott Elementary. Shirley Ralph is a legend.
Yeah.
Really all communities in acting. Like I think the thing that people knew her for first was Dreamgirls on Broadway, and she's done 7 million things since then. I always say, like, my favorite Shirley Ralph story is having tweeted about, you know, really not being a fan of her after Sister Act 2 because of the way that she did Lauryn Hill. And she tweeted me back, and I was like, I'm okay now. I'm okay. We're good. It was like, it always made me laugh. But also, Quinta Brunson has just made Emmy history with Abbott Elementary landing 3 nominations for Outstanding Comedy Series, Lead Actress in a Comedy, and Writing for a Comedy Series for the pilot. Mm. She's the first Black woman to earn 3 nominations in the comedy categories in the same year. At 32 years old, Brunson is also the youngest Black woman ever nominated in the comedy acting category. Shout out to Quinta Brunson. I think everybody's watching Abbott Elementary. Apparently, that's
yes,
how that works.
Everybody and their mother. Yes.
Everybody.
I'm so inspired. So inspired.
I'm a big fan. And like, everyone's always had amazing things to say about Quinta as well. So shout out to her and Cheryl Lee Ralph.
Yes.
I want to let y'all know before we go, Travelle and I are both on a brand new episode of Positively Gam with Gammy Norris, who you will know from Red Table Talk as Jada Pinkett Smith's mom, grandmother in the family, and she has her own show, and it's been really cool to be on over there. Travelle's on for the first time. I'm the returning champion because, I mean, obviously. Make sure to go check that out. It came out on Tuesday. We've got clips up on social media. We're talking about code switching. What's interesting there is Gam is telling us about when she's been code switching on Red Table Talk and how she's like, I feel like I'm faking it some days. Really, really great conversation. So be sure to check that out. Ashley, that's it. That's a show. We did
it. Yay, we did it. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Tell people where they can find you on the social medias to follow all of the work that you're doing.
Yes, you can follow me or find me on Instagram at Ashley Blaine, on Twitter the same, but I'm rarely on Twitter, so don't be alarmed if I don't respond. and then you can also follow my pod at Trials to Triumphs Pod on Instagram.
Awesome. All right. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, number one, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating. Leave us a review. Let us know what you love about the show. But also, we ask that you share the show. A lot more of you we've been seeing in our DMs sharing the show. So we really, really appreciate you telling your friends about it, putting us in your Insta story, tagging the account. We'll make sure to reshare it. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can hit us up on Instagram, on Twitter, both at Fanti Podcast using the hashtag FantiFam, or you can send us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org. You can join the Fanti fam at MaximumFun.org/join. Our music is done by Corece, that's Core.ece. You can get his music wherever you get your Slayworthy audio. Graphics are by Ashley Wynn and the beautiful people over at Moonhouse Creative. Our producer is, okay, Ash, when I do this, you have to do air horns in the background because Travelle's not here. You have to,
okay. Bah, bah, bah,
bah. Are you ready?
Okay.
Stand by. Laura Swisher!
That was horrible, but here we go. I'm the guest host.
That was actually really good.
I apologize.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Great question.
Yes.
So IUI stands
for... Thank you.